For National Poetry Month in April, KWBU is highlighting four local poets to share what influences their work, as well as how they entered into the medium. Our first poet is Ginger Hanchey. Hanchey is a lecturer at Baylor University. She specializes in Old English poetics and has had her poems published in several journals like Nashville Review, Foundry, and Tar River Poetry. She also will have her debut book, Letters of a Long Name, coming out on July 19th. Welcome, Ginger.
Thank you so much.
So, when did you become interested in poetry?
Well, I've loved reading poetry. I have a PhD in Old English poetry, but I had never written poetry until I became a lecturer in the English department at Baylor. And that also coincided with a few years after my youngest son's birth. And I think that that was really the thing that got me going, that helped me feel like I had something I really needed to work through and say. And I had the right to do that. I had the right to say it.
Right. So it's like you studied it, but did you ever start like writing it until after?
No, I'd never written a poem until about 5 years. Well, probably like 4.5 years ago.
So what were some of the differences you found with like studying it, but then tackling it yourself?
Yeah, I think studying it, I felt like I had a right to study it. We're all in school and we're all told to do different things, but I don't know that I had ever really been given the opportunity to write poetry or had anybody say, anybody can do this. And I really believe that now, especially as a teacher. I teach a lot of freshman writing classes at Baylor. And I have come to believe that anybody can write poetry, that we all think in metaphorical terms, and linguistic theory tells us that we use metaphors to make sense of really complex ideas. Like the idea that happiness is up and sadness is down, we use that socially to understand feelings. And so I think I've kind of come into understanding more of the world and feeling like I can write and I can say things.
So why like old poetic, like Old English poetics? Because some of that, like whenever you read it, sometimes you're like, what are they even saying? It's like
yes.
A whole other language.
Yes. Well, and Old English really is a whole other language. You have to learn a whole new grammar. And but I think for me, Old English, there was something stark and beautiful about it. It was an oral poetry first, and there's so much about their culture that's different than our culture. And yet, there's so much feeling that's the same as the kind of feelings we have. There's a lot of loneliness to Old English poetry, and a lot of wishing for beauty to remain and stay. And I'm really attracted to that idea. I think I have those kinds of thoughts a lot myself.
How would you describe your poetry?
I think most of my poetry has to do with relationships, and I hope that my poetry is clear to readers. That's what I try to achieve. And I also hope that it's image-driven, so I want to come up with a picture that really moves someone the way I feel like I was moved to and inspired to write the poem to begin with.
What are some writers or poets that you believe influenced your work?
Well, we are so lucky at Baylor to have Dr. Chloe Honum, who is our poet in our department. And she's just amazing. And when I first wanted to write poetry, the department had just voted to hire her. And so she was coming, but not at Baylor yet. So I had emailed her, and she was really gracious. And I asked her, how do I start writing poetry? And I started reading her poetry, and I just thought it was lovely. It was so beautiful. I think the thing I love most about Chloe's poetry is that it just stirs me emotionally immediately, but I can't understand why. And it takes me a long time to try to figure out how it happened. How did I get so moved? It's mysterious and beautiful. Dylan Thomas. I love Dylan Thomas's poetry. The thing I like about his voice is that he does so many unusual things with language. One of my favorite lines of poetry is at the end of Fern Hill, and I just think it's amazing. And I'll read some here, but he says, "Oh, as I was young and easy, in the mercy of his means, time held me, green and dying, though I sang in my chains like the sea." And it's just so unusual but gorgeous, hard to understand. But then when you do understand it, there's something so satisfying about it.
Do you think that your poetry comes out of a singular feeling or a place inside of you? Like, I have to be in this to be able to write?
I think that's such a great question. I ask myself that question a lot. I've tried to understand how it comes. And I will say that when I have margins of time to reflect, I think I write poetry more. So, for instance, at the end of semesters, I seem to have more poems to write. When I first started writing poetry, I would compose it in my head as I was laying in Atticus's bed, my youngest son, trying to wait for him to fall asleep, and it would always take forever. And that's sort of how I began. So I do think like the margins of time in a day or in a semester, in a year, kind of help me. And
I think
writers talk about that a lot. I follow a lot of poets on Twitter, and you hear all the time poets sort of complaining about being in a lull, but also knowing it's coming, it will happen again. And then there are some writers who write faithfully every day. That's the way it works for them.
So you say you've been writing poetry for about 5 years. What have you noticed from like the first year that you were writing to now has changed?
Well, I think that I'm more confident in taking risks. So I've written different kinds and forms of poems than when I was first starting. And I think that I'm more confident in trusting my instinct now than I was at the very beginning. I think there were a lot of questions at the beginning, and that's okay, but I'm glad to be over those questions and listening more to that inner voice.
Would you say it like is like gaining confidence in your writing? Is that almost what you're...
I think so. I think having things published really helps. I remember the first time I wrote a poem, I thought, is this even a poem? What have I just done? You know, and so I think that now I save time by just hearing, you know, and thinking about what I have to say.
What was it like the first time you had your poem published? And how does that compare to your new book that's coming out? Like, what is the feelings the same? Or
I think there will never be anything to compare to that first poem being published. It was euphoria. It was just such a wonderful feeling. It was probably like the happiness I felt when we got our first house. It was just an amazing life moment that it was a dream coming true, and there'll probably never be another poem getting published for me that's as special as that moment. And it was San Pedro River Review that published my first poem.
How does that compare to your new book that's coming out, Letters of a Long Name?
Yeah, I'm thrilled about having my book come out because it's about the story of my second son's birth and difficulties in a NICU and in a children's hospital. So I feel like because it's a story that's been completed in our lives, but also with the book that follows that narrative arc, there's something very satisfying and moving to me and my family about having it come out in a form, in an art form, something that was so hard for us and challenging.
Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah, Atticus, my oldest son, Oliver, is wonderful, and he was born on time, 9 pounds. His feet didn't even fit into the shoes that I brought to the hospital because he was so big. But Atticus came suddenly 10 weeks early. We had no indication that that would happen. But then we realized a few weeks into his stay in the NICU that he had some other severe life-threatening complications that were difficult to identify and figure out. And so he was in the NICU here in Waco for about a month, and then he was transferred to Cook Children's Hospital in Fort Worth for another 2.5 months. And during that time, he was not able, for much of that time, he was not able to process any food at all. So he had what's called a persistent feeding intolerance. So he lived on IV fluids alone. And they didn't know if that would resolve or how it would resolve. And then he had something else called chylothorax, which is a very serious condition. So we didn't know if or when we'd be leaving the NICU with him and coming home. And then that was really also trying because we had this beautiful other son that was suffering in his own way, but was such a champion. And so anyway, I think that it was probably about a year after that, after getting home from the hospital, that I began to write poetry and be able to sort of process that experience.
I mean, wow. When was he able to come home, Atticus?
He was born November 10th, and he came home at the very end of January.
That's a long time. Mm-hmm. And having to be transferred like that, mm-hmm. I mean, how do you even manage that? Because, you know, you have a job. Like you said, you already
yes.
had your other son. And
yes. I guess all I can say is that it was excruciating. It was a living nightmare. But our church, Calvary Baptist Church, was incredible. They really did carry our mat to the Lord for us in a time where I at least experienced a lot of doubt. And They took care of us. And so I think that there were other good people, too, who really came alongside us and took care of us. And it felt like we only needed one thing, and that was for Atticus to be well. But truly, we also needed their love because it helped us recover, I think, after Atticus began to get well.
So whenever you did get to come home with him, which is awesome, did you have any challenges adjusting back to, like, what some would say normal life?
Yes, it was a very hard first year. He had to stay in the house, and we were balancing work with that. And we also just had this fear that he would have recurring issues, and it was a terrifying first year. And I know a lot of people have children who have ongoing health issues, and I think that that's the biggest change for me, and I'm so grateful that I can think about those people now in a way I had never thought about before, and hopefully do real things that matter for people who come into my life who have harder situations than parents with normal circumstances.
So whenever you started using poetry to talk about this time in your life, what were some things, maybe themes or subjects that you saw coming up a lot?
I think that I wanted to have memories and somehow be able to catch those memories on paper. So I think the way the book works, Letters of a Long Name, it sort of traces for me coming out of such despair and coming into a place where I could believe in life again.
Why the title? It sparked my curiosity.
Well, thank you. It's from a line in the very last poem, so I won't give it away, but it's at the very end of the book, and hopefully it helps encapsulate all the other poems and what they're doing together.
Can you tell me the name of your poem that you're reading today, if it has one, and what it's about?
Sure. Milk is about the experience of pumping when I wasn't able to even use any of the milk to feed Atticus. So it's a short poem, and that's what it's about. But I think on the bigger picture, it's really a love poem to my husband, Dan. Milk. He lived on IV fluids for months. Even the smallest trace of milk caused him to vomit blood. They told me to keep pumping, how good it would be for his system if he could ever tolerate food. And in this distorted dream world, I let it be my mother love, the grief and the milk both in endless supply, a way to express something, even if the pots of ink were white. I didn't see it until later, like in a dream that unfolds after waking. But you were there doing this, taking the bottles of milk in the night when I pumped them, or in the day, pouring them off into meal-apportioned bottles, so careful not to spill, and with black ink registering the day and the hour of our love, so that now, after the dream, when I stand at the freezer, I see row after row of our duet of prayer and elegy stored against the day when he would live.
Wow, it's beautiful. I didn't even think about like your body having to adjust after a pregnancy, but also you're dealing with that, and I think that touched on that. So what was that like, you know, even physically?
Physically it was so exhausting. I think pumping for months without a baby to be able to receive it and to help regulate my body was one of the hardest things I've ever physically had to do. It was really a challenge, and it meant that we couldn't ever sleep in long periods of time during those months, too. So
I would love to hear another one.
Thank you. This one is called On the Brazos. By the river my brother was named for, my two sons jump from rock to rock, big one loping in front of the small one. I nearly lost them both, one to a failing body, the other to the grief that almost overwhelmed me. They are my two miracles, like the gift of the river and the gift of the land. The younger one jumps wildly, and the rock catches him every time. The older one tires, comes up beside me, puts arms around my waist. Happiness spreads beneath my skin like a bruise.
I loved that last line. Can you read it one more time to me?
Sure.
Just that last line.
Happiness spreads beneath my skin like a bruise.
I mean, did that line just like come out of you, or like how did you that's just like,
thank you, Kaylee. You're such an encouraging person.
Oh, sorry.
It was I think it did just sort of entered my head at some point, but I think that I had constantly been thinking about how you could feel happy, but it's coming out of a situation where you still feel wounded, and your happiness is part of your wound.
And I also want to ask you, like, it touches on the relationships between both of your sons. Has Oliver ever told you about, like, how he felt during that time? And that's why, like, you have him in that imagery, like, clinging to you. But Atticus is, like, jumping.
You know, Oliver was just amazing. He did not really manifest needy behavior during this whole time, which I can't believe, because I know if I had been in second grade with a new sibling and with all that we had going on, I would have been a lot different. But he was just amazing the whole time. And I love him so much. And I think I constantly worried about how that situation affected him, but he is such a trooper. When we lead our study abroad programs to Italy in the summers, Dan and I, Oliver is the one that handles all the challenges the best, and that's just who he is in our family. So
that's great. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then your last one.
This one is called Visiting the Memory Care Ward. My grandmother said he only ever cried once, when his mother died, briefly as a light rain even then. Today I don't think he knows me until he tucks his chin to his chest and weeps, says he wants to go home. He drinks cranberry juice from a styrofoam cup, and my three-year-old watches him delightedly drinks when he drinks. In the far corner, a woman lies on a ration of sunshine, big body curled up, confident, cat-like. Another approaches, berates us with profane words, exhorts us back to work. My grandmother says she once managed an airplane production line, implies there was something in the metal, seeds of dementia. When my mother was growing up, my grandfather spent evenings in the garage, built a P-40 fighter plane 70% to scale, flew it himself. I hold the day's disturbances in my hand like stones, run my fingers over them until sleep takes them, gives me other memories of being in class again, staring into old English manuscripts with students, them noting the strange writing, long trains of thorny letters running margin to margin, words cutting into words, me telling them someone will come along and piece out the units of thought, add punctuation and white space. We'll find the four beat lines, lay them down in a shape on the page, give it a title.
I actually want to really dissect that one. Can you tell me a little bit about the inspiration about behind that?
This was a day that I visited my grandparents, and I think there was so much to think about and contemplate, and I really did lay in bed with Atticus that evening trying to help him go to sleep, and fell into a kind of dream before I woke myself up to get out of his room, and it was this dream of being with my students and looking at these manuscripts that made no sense to us. And I thought it was really interesting that my mind took me there after this day of hard thinking.
What were some things that you've learned through your grandparents? What are some lessons that you've taken from their relationship?
My grandparents are amazing. They actually are from Waco, and my grandmother used to make all the sing costumes. She was a costume designer. So even when I was at Baylor as a student, she made my sing costume. And she was an entrepreneur, and my grandfather was very independent-minded, too. They were both brilliant. My grandmother still lives here, and I love her. She's like a sister to me. I have two other sisters, too. And I think from them, I get a sense of how it's good to be independent in the world and to try to do brilliant things, because that's what they both did.
With your book, what have been some surprises, like putting it together? Like, is it situated where, like, chronologically?
That's exactly how it works. It works chronologically. So okay. I didn't write the poems chronologically. I skipped around, but then when I went back to order them, it works as a development of the experience being in this kind of horror moment and then coming out of it and being a different person in the world.
So what has your family, like, said whenever you've read? I mean, have you read your poems to them? I'm sure.
They get to read them when they're published. So,
oh,
I mean, they get to read them as the journals publish them. So they haven't read the complete book yet. None of my family has. But they're so supportive. My mom and husband especially. Sometimes I'll let Oliver read some that I won't let anyone else read, just to be a sounding board, because he's always very honest with me. And I feel like he is a poet in his heart, too. He's almost 13. So I think it's kind of fun for them to get to read it as they come out.
How old is Atticus now?
Atticus is 5. He's in pre-K at St. Paul's, which is the greatest school on earth. And he is just a delight to our family. He's adventurous. He's daring. He eats only healthy foods. And we think that that is something about his body, knowing what it needs. And he amazes us. He amazes us every day.
So how can people find your book once it comes out?
Well, it's actually available for pre-order right now through finishinglinepress.com. And it comes out July 19th, but it's available to be ordered right now.
All right. Thank you, Ginger, for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Kaitlee.
More of Ginger Hanchey's poetry can be found online at kwbu.org. While you're there, you can learn more about her upcoming book and listen to an extended interview. This has been KWBU's special series for National Poetry Month.